Hey, you. Yes, you guessed 10,542. Change your username. And while you're in a More Like Radio live page listening to fine quality programming, notice the banner ad just slightly above the chat room? It's a link to something you want in Amazon. Click it. It's probably reminding you to order something you need from Amazon.com. Don't leave MLR and type the URL like a sucker. Just click the link and it'll open in a new window. This way you can buy your shit and continue listening to the show. Now, change your username. Right there on the right, stupid.
This is John Benjamin, and you're listening to the Nerd Hour.
Better late than never, am I right, guys?
Even losing all the weight, you're still slow to the party.
No. What?
Timber.
I'm going down.
I didn't think that joke through, let's be honest. Make a skinny, former fat guy joke and it didn't work. Much like most of my comedy.
Almost there. Just don't...
Much like most of your comedy.
Hey, you know, I got laughs, bitch. What was that?
That was me laughing.
Oh, well, at least you're laughing, dick. All right, so I played the Ghostbusters song for a reason. I'm pretty sure most of you already know.
He gonna be dead.
So, Western Echo, oh great, over the top corny's back.
Ouch. Ouch.
You were a smidge over the top. Just don't let it happen again. All right.
Fuck you!
Hey. Stop it.
No!
No temper tantrums. Or I would threaten to take away the Transformers, but there's way too many of them.
I lost count again. I lost count after 108. But I have 3 GoBots. I have to recount, okay?
Oh, so you have 3. You can keep count of the food stamp Transformers.
Yeah, pretty much. Because those are just here because it's like, oh, those are the 3 that actually look nice.
Yeah. And so anyway, Cornax, good job.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, listen, I got a legit job.
Mm-hmm. Oh. And, like, mine isn't.
Paper or plastic? Anyway. What? Cornax? Sorry, it was fine when you took a jab at my comedy, but it's not fine when I take... Oh, I'm sorry.
I just love watching you get more and more uncomfortable.
And you're being Kurt Warner before the Arena League. Relax.
What?
What? Didn't what? Anyway. So Harold Ramis died this week. Those of you who don't know him, you apparently weren't born anywhere near the 80s. But then again, if you were that young, why are you listening to this station? First off, he's most known.
I don't know. Maybe they live in Australia.
Well, good point.
But I mean, or they're me. Or Maul. I mean, hell, I'm 20, Maul's 19, Matt's 18.
Wait, what?
Yeah.
Maul is 19?
Yes.
What?
Yes.
God damn, we got some young-ass listeners.
Fucking a year younger than me.
Yeah, you're a young one. It's not discluding you from being way young.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you were grandfathered in by Cousin Joe. That's how you discover this legion of animals.
Like, yeah, pretty much.
Like, you came in with Cousin Joe. Kind of, I think, like, Red Sox. Actually, I think Red Sox might have been Hooter and Greenway.
The only reason I am here today is because Joe wanted to bang my cousin.
Yeah.
Pretty much. Because and on old episode of Cousin Joe Show, Joe said, the only reason you're friends with women are either you really weren't ever going to pursue anything with her and you're just friends, or you were hoping to bang her. And so that puts Joe in a tight spot where he either has to insult my cousin or admit to me that he wanted to bang my cousin, which, knowing Joe, it's the latter.
It's always the latter. Come on.
So she hung out with him in high school. So I met Joe. I listened to his show. Joe came to More Like Radio. I'm here now.
Yes. And if you want to hear more of Jacuzzi Joe. He will be on Brainstee Radio tomorrow in the hot tub. The same hot tub that he decided to film a video in. And then try to, like.
I was not expecting the dick.
Well,
I really wasn't.
It's Coletta. He's in a bathtub not wearing anything. Did you really expect
it? I expected maybe something like a slip or something. I didn't expect it full on frontal, especially on YouTube.
Well, technically we got a slip.
Oh, yeah.
Technically.
Puns. We're full of them.
We're full of them. And a few other things. But anyway.
Like shit?
Yes. Harold Ramis died.
Lack of talent?
Well, no. You see, I make up for... No, I'm kidding. We have talent. Shut up. What do you think we are at the other place?
Brain stew.
The other place, dickhead. The other
brain stew.
No, brain stew is talent. Yeah, Brain Stew Radio with Hammy, the talented guy of the one former show. I'm sorry, I shouldn't take shots.
Oh, you mean Planet Platypus?
Planet Marsupial. I'm not going to get into that.
Planet Echidna. Planet Hedgehog. Planet some other animal that showed up in the Sonic the Hedgehog video games.
Trust us, we're eventually going to get it on topic.
Trust us, we're not.
So, again... Harold Ramis passed away this week. For those of you who are living under a rock or just dummies, he played Egon. He's known for playing Egon Spengler in Ghostbusters 1 and 2. You know, basically that the movies that led to the cartoon and just the franchise. You know, no big. He's also known for being starring in Stripes and being and teaming up with Ivan Reitman quite a bit. Red Sox and Chet says all the shows on Sunday have talent, right, guys? Yes. Okay. I'd say, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I'd say 5/6. At least.
I'd say we pretty much, at this point, almost fired everyone without talent, except for me. Somehow I'm still allowed.
You're still allowed because you're on a show with me and Ariel. Oh, no, hold on. Ariel and I.
No, actually, the proper grammar would be me and Ariel in that case. Or Ariel and me.
Ariel and were.
Timber.
This kind of sucked to read about, though. Because, like I said, Harold Ramis has been in a lot of movies or had a hand in a lot of movies that I really like.
Yeah.
Especially connected to my childhood, since I'm kind of old-ish. Compared to you young... Well, you know, even you've got an appreciation for a lot of his movies.
Yeah.
Like...
Hello.
Come on.
National Lampoon.
Yep. National Lampoon. And can I just point out that Ghostbusters, for being made in the 80s, had decent special effects.
Look.
Even
Ghostbusters was way ahead of its time. Like,
so ahead of its time.
It's got better CG than films nowadays. Like, turn on Sci-Fi or Sci-Fi if they choose to spell it now. Turn on that. Look at the CGI there. Look at it from Ghostbusters. Honestly, Harold Ramis has my heart mostly half because of Ghostbusters, half because he was one of the main screenwriters for Animal House, which is one of my favorite movies of all time.
Yep. And for newer movies, he was Seth Rogen's dad in Knocked Up.
That he was. That he was.
And he was still pretty active as a director. Cornax.
Yeah.
No, no, I thought you were
gonna I'm waiting for you.
No, I was kind of going to have you come.
Like, wait, did you have any?
It's back and forth, Cornax. Come on.
Okay.
Or, you know, but like, I guess that now there's everyone's making the drawings commemorating the fact that he died. Like, there's the one
God, there was the one where he was in the trap and he was waving to the Ghostbusters.
Yep.
Oh, you know what one of them I saw? It was he had the PKE meter in his hand and was going wild. And it was Slimer going up behind him with his hand on his shoulder going, it's not that bad, buddy.
Oh, man. And then there's the one, someone made a drawing. It's just Egon's, like, outfit on some sort of a hanger, kind of like a.
Yeah. That. Oh, Jesus Christ. I was like, oh, shit, man. Like, I love Ghostbusters. But, and, like, there's some people who get fucking religious about it. And hey, even I was like, oh, man, I'm going to cry.
Hey, could you imagine what will happen when Peter Weller dies?
Oh, boy. Oh, man. Wow.
Could you imagine the RoboCop pictures that will be posted on Twitter and Facebook?
Well, like, one immediately comes to my mind of just, like, the RoboCop actual robot parts with all the human parts missing. Like, just instead of it being, you know, an actual body, it's now just, like, a remaining metal husk.
Oh, yeah, like, take all the human... All right, yeah, that probably could be made, but I don't know if people would end up doing it. I think it would just be a lot of RoboCop pictures.
Bum, 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 bum. Bum, 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 bum.
Dennis...
Bum, 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 bum.
Dennis says he can't wait for Malcolm McDowell to die so he can post Caligula memes.
Wow.
Why
no,
wait?
No. He said Michael McDowell.
All right. I was trying to help a brother out.
No. Dennis would call us out for fucking anything.
All right. Good point.
We are not giving him slack for jack shit. Okay?
All right. Good point. Yeah. Dennis, who's this Michael McDowell? Dick. Oh, he's high.
Late and to the party. No. It's my job.
My job. My
watch, I'm going to be going to the laundry room in a second.
Oh, okay. Sturt. No. Ariel.
Yeah.
I'm going to go to the laundry room now. Oh, no. Please don't have that happen. We don't need you on that.
Okay, let's see. I've done nicotine and easily quit. I've had alcohol and usually just said, at this point, the only thing I'm addicted to is collecting things and food.
Oh, boy. Collecting things and food.
And even then, food, I'm getting a little wary.
Yeah, and Cornax, you have, like, had some of the things you've told me you've done food-wise. Holy shit, even me, like, when I was bigger, I was like, I don't know if I can handle that. I don't know if my body can handle that.
Oh, did I tell you about my recent invention?
What's that?
All right, you know the McGangbang is you take a McDouble and McChicken, and you basically put one sandwich completely inside the other.
Yep.
Well, I call
God,
something...
Are we talking about food creations?
Yes, we are.
Cornaxes.
I call it the McDP, and what it is you take two McChickens, you take the bomb bun off each, and you put a McDouble in between them, and you sandwich them together, and just take a big bite.
Wow.
I'm thinking about a bigger one where it's a McQuad, where it's like two McDoubles in one, like four patties, and you know. Moving on.
Yeah, moving on. Definitely. Now that we've got Ariel back, we can preview the Oscars.
To be fair, it was Punchy who brought up food.
No.
More. No. I brought up having an addiction to food. Punchy kept the ball rolling.
Well, yes, because I figured I got this thing to mention the fact that some of the eating habits you've shown. And now we're going to talk about the Oscars. From food to the Oscars.
Ah, the Oscars. So yes. Happy it's snowing tomorrow because now I have an excuse to not go to work.
Yeah.
Oh, you're one of those people.
Yeah.
Hey, I've missed two, like, multiple days due to work.
I will not drive in the snow.
I love working when there's a snowstorm because no one comes in, and like I can just sit on the register, which we aren't allowed to do. But it's like even when the main store manager is there, the strictest one is there. He let us sit on the register, play fucking blackjack. You know, we were on our phones. We were able to do whatever we want, and we got paid for it. So this next time, I'm legit bringing a portable DVD player and a copy of the original Django.
All right.
Django.
Yeah, no, I won't because, like, one, there's, like, no salt. There's nothing. And two, like, my car just, I just can't handle driving the snow very well.
Yeah, speaking of the salt issue, it turns, you know, despite the fact that the parking lot that I slipped in wasn't salted at all, apparently they were salting for 14 hours. And thus, well, I'm just out of $50 for the two doctor's appointments ahead.
Ooh. Yeah. So anyway, enough about food and snow. We got the Oscars this week.
Food and tomorrow. And food and snow and food and snow.
And so what I'm going to do, we're going to do, like, kind of predict the big ones and see who you guys
think. Joe Coletta's penis.
No, that's going to – Ariel's going to see that in meme form pretty soon when she gets in the chat.
I'm pretty sure yeah. Well, now she's not going in the chat.
Nope.
In GIF form. Ariel, there's a video Joe put of him in a tub talking about an important announcement for Cousin Joe. And he tries to, like, do something hilarious by jumping out of the tub and it, you know, obviously –
dick flopping everywhere.
But then he slips on the ground.
And hits his head.
Yeah, he fucking slips.
Great.
So anyway, he's got
his pain entertains.
By the way, Joe Coletta has Anderson's. Yeah,
I'm pretty sure I just did a footer laugh.
Yes, you did. Joe Coletta has Anderson Silva legs. He does. So now we're just gonna do the main, like, six.
I am gonna say this. All right, ready? I think if it happens, Leonardo DiCaprio is definitely going to win, but I think it's going to be a tie between him and McConaughey, which would be really interesting if that happened. But that's my prediction.
That's your prediction? All right. Well, first thing we're going to do Best Picture.
Okay.
For those who don't know.
12 Years a Slave. Let me just tell you right now.
All right. Well.
Yeah, probably.
I am going to go with.
I think if they don't. There are going to be some people who are going to be dickish enough to go, it's racism.
That's racism, bro. I love the racism, bro. I'm kind of torn. I've only seen a few of the movies.
I'm, like, tomorrow I'm going to spend the day watching the last couple nominees that I, like, the ones that I want to see. Like, I have really no interest in seeing Nebraska or Philomena, but, like.
Can I just clarify? I really do think 12 Years a Slave is a phenomenal movie, and it would deserve any awards. No. I think it's, like, from what I've seen, it looks like it's a great movie.
Well, Steve McQueen's a very good director, so, like, that's where I'm, like.
And it probably deserves any awards, but let's face it. It's, you know that if it doesn't win anything, someone somewhere is going to start some sort of trouble by claiming it's racism.
What they'll do, what I think is going to happen. I think 12 Years a Slave, even though I haven't seen it, just with the buzz it's been getting, I think that's going to win. And I think this year Steve McQueen actually does get Best Director.
Yeah, I'm, like, torn on Best Director. Like, I think it could go to Alfonso Cuarón for Gravity because that's just, like, a feat as far as, like, being a director and doing something like that. I mean, it's going to get all the technological awards anyway, like, as it should. But I think that is great directing right there. But, like, again, I haven't seen 12 Years a Slave yet, which I'm going to watch it tomorrow. But usually I know they go director and best picture, but I think it might go Cuarón for director and then 12 Years a Slave for picture.
I don't know. They already did the one wins director, one wins picture.
But it's sometimes it's so varied. I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know. They should really – and they should also expand the field of best director to 10.
They should. They should give the 10 –
Like, you can't have five.
You can't have five director nominees and then 10 Best Picture nominees, because those other five movies, what, did they, like, not have directors magically? Like,
I guess it's better than how they used to nominate movies for Best Documentary back in the day. And this came to light when the documentaries Hoop Dreams and Crumb were not nominated, and they were both, like, highly critically acclaimed. Because apparently, when they did screenings for the movies for the Academy, the people who did the nominations for Best Documentary had, at the time, had a system where if someone gave up on the movie, they would flash a light.
Oh, okay.
And if most of them if most of their lights were turned on, then they would stop. All of them would stop watching the movie.
Oh.
So, the Hoop Dreams, they didn't even get through 20 minutes of it before they did that.
Oh.
Also, a lot of the people on there worked for distributors of a lot of documentaries, so they were voting more towards the documentaries that they wanted.
Right.
And, like, these two movies not being nominated caused such a stir about that they changed how they did the
problem.
Yeah. And that's why, like, when certain movies weren't nominated the one year, I think it was, like, The Dark Knight was snubbed for Best Picture because it was only five at the time. They decided to expand the Best Picture to 10. I think there's a lot of directors who've been snubbed this year, and they should really consider expanding that field.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, it's hard to say that five of the 10 directors should not have been, you know, didn't deserve to be nominated.
It's hard to say, like, who should and who shouldn't.
Yeah.
Like,
so they should just nominate the directors and the films hand in hand.
I feel like that is a given. Like, it should be.
Yeah. So, like I said, I think we're all pretty much going 12 Years a Slave for picture and director. Best actor, we've got Christian Bale in American Hustle, Bruce Dern in Nebraska, Leonardo DiCaprio for The Wolf of Wall Street. I'm not even going to try to pronounce that name in 12 Years a Slave. And
I'm going Leo.
Matthew McConaughey in Dallas Buyers Club. I think Leo also.
I think it's going to be a tie.
I'm not thinking.
It's definitely going to be Leo, but if anything, it might be a tie.
Yeah, I think, I don't know, either way, I think, I don't know if they're going to do a tie. They try to avoid those kind of things. We'll see.
I mean, they should. I don't know, because, like, it seems like everything seems to be going to McConaughey, but, like, I don't know. It should go to Leo because he had more to do.
Yeah. Best actress. I think we all pretty much, for the most part, picked Leo, except Ariel also did a tie with Matthew McConaughey. So
I might be partially right. I don't
So far, we're all in agreement.
Right.
Best actress. We've got Amy Adams, American Hustle; Cate Blanchett, Blue Jasmine; Sandra Bullock in Gravity; Judi Dench in Philomena; and Meryl Streep in August, Osage County.
Let's see. I think Amy Adams might get this one.
She should get this one.
Yeah.
But and the reason why I say that is because Gravity is going to get a bunch of other awards. Let's face it.
I think Gravity is going to get all the technical awards, and while Sandra Bullock is really, really good in Gravity, like. Again, I just think Amy Adams had more to do.
Yeah. No.
Wow.
No, yeah, I mean.
Best supporting actor.
They both had a lot going on in that movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
True. Never mind. I was thinking about. Wait.
Amy Adams had more to do than Sandra Bullock. Amy Adams was part of a pretty ensemble cast. Sandra Bullock was pretty much working off herself.
Yeah, that's true. You're right. And George Clooney's voice. Yeah, it could go either one for either one. I don't know.
Best.
I feel like they're going to give it to Amy Adams.
Yeah. Best supporting actor. Got another name I don't know how to pronounce. Captain Phillips as one of the pirates. Bradley Cooper in American Hustle. Michael Fassbender in 12 Years a Slave. Jonah Hill in The Wolf of Wall Street. And Jared Leto for Dallas Buyers Club.
It's going to be Jared Leto.
Yeah, this is clearly going to be Jared Leto.
Yeah.
I mean, he's been pretty much sweeping it up lately, like
right.
The whole award season. Best Supporting Actress is where it might get a little muddled. Okay.
It's going to go to Lupita Nyong'o, I'll tell you that right now.
I haven't seen 12 Years a Slave, which is why it's hard for me to, I don't know. Let's see. They already gave Jennifer Lawrence one last year.
Yeah, because she won last year, but also it's like, I don't know, it's like different, it's different performances. I mean, they all the performances are good. But it's going to go to Lupita Nyong'o because one, I mean, it's been like her, she's been sweeping it mostly. The only time she didn't win was the Golden Globes and then I think the BAFTAs.
And I think the Film Critics Association Awards too, I think.
Yeah, maybe that too, but.
Yeah, no, you'd say I'd agree.
Yep.
Cornax?
Yep.
All right.
Okay, that's an agreement, I guess.
Wow, this is like the anticlimactic pick show.
Yep.
Oh, well, whatevsies.
Okay.
So either we're all right or we're all wrong.
Hold on, I was actually looking up other roles that actors had this year as well, so I was a bit distracted.
True. All right, so there's, you know, we sometimes try to do a list because we like to make fun of the lists, and IGN is very, yeah, they're very soapboxy.
Mildly trollish.
Picks. Mildly trollish, but at the same time, like.
And mildly trollish.
Mildly trollish, but at the same time, like, you sometimes question the view, the qualifications of the writer based on what they pick.
That's where I come in with mildly trollish, because it seems like a lot of times they're just trying to get a rise out of people.
And for those who want to follow along, I am posting the link in chat.
Oh, Ponchi, what are you angry at?
No, I'm just saying. I'm not angry.
What are you angry at?
I'm not angry.
You were just ragging on.
You sound very mildly annoyed.
What was I ragging on?
I don't know.
You were mentioning how, you know, what are the qualifications of some of these writers? And then you post an article.
Well, so, because that's
there's got to be something in this article that has at least mildly annoyed you.
No. Well, not. Well, okay. I'll get to it when we do the article.
No,
I'm going to wait till we get to the parts that I have an issue with.
Now.
No.
Yes.
16 best pictures that.
Yes. Yes.
No. No.
Stop.
Yes.
Cornax. Settle down. 16 best pictures that never won best picture.
No, what a great title.
Yep, I know. So, that's complaint number one, by the way. That's issue number one.
Oh, good. It's like, I feel like, though, it's just so easy to rag on the title because I feel like we're just, like, picking at, like, it's like picking at BuzzFeed titles.
Well, you know what, though? They deserve it. Brokeback Mountain is the first one they mention. Then they go, movie that won, Crash. Then he goes, Ang Lee's heart-wrenching portrayal of a relationship between sheep herders, Ennis and Jack, was nominated for Best Picture but lost out to Paul Higgins' Crash. While it won some other categories, Brokeback Mountain was sadly overlooked as the relevant piece of human drama it is when it came to the show's biggest award. Like most movies on this list, however, its legacy lies within the content of the movie itself, the earnest performances of its actors, and the transcendence of theme of true love. Well, but Crash was also deserving. So this is another issue, is that they make it like the other movie shouldn't have won in some cases, whereas you could make an argument for Crash.
Yeah.
You could make an argument for either movie.
No, you can make an argument for Crash. I'm not going to deny that. You can make an argument for Crash. I'm not saying Crash should have won, but I'm saying you can make an argument for Crash.
Like, it's at least it's not such a glaring, you know, it's not as glaring as they're trying to write it out to be.
No, like, they're making it seem like it was just, like, this big, like, upset. Like,
yeah. And the next one, Citizen Kane, movie that won, How Green Was My Valley. And then often considered the most influential / greatest American film ever made.
Look, this is No. Here's the thing with Citizen Kane. Citizen Kane is enjoyable, sort of. It's definitely influential. I will give it that. It is boring as fuck.
Well, yes, but they're not talking about whether it is or it isn't.
They're talking
subjectively.
About
they're talking about. A lot of people have said this. That's
now,
just what they're saying.
So annoying.
Now, if this writer was as, how do you say it? If he was as knowledgeable as he is trying to seem that he is, he would realize the reason why Citizen Kane had such a hard time winning Best Picture.
Because of the subject matter.
Because of the subject matter.
Because of who it was about.
Yep, exactly. Because a lot of people, William Randolph Hearst.
They didn't want to, yeah.
Yeah. So he did everything he could to sandbag the movie to make sure that it didn't gain any traction. That's why that movie was such a late bloomer. He could have put that in there because that would have been the reason. I don't think it got
Making it seem like it was just overlooked.
Like William Randolph Hearst put it, he controlled a lot of the newspapers.
Yeah, like, look, this is what it says. It says, remarkably, Citizen Kane is responsible for massive innovation in filmmaking techniques. Yeah, it is, from cinematography to structure to the use of musical score. Yeah, absolutely, it's great. Yet it went unrecognized for those accomplishments in its time. And it's like, no, there's a reason behind it. Like, there's no mention of William Randolph Hearst.
Yeah,
and it just says, since then, however, its brilliance has been celebrated tenfold. Yeah, because
William Randolph Hearst died.
Yeah, you can't keep it away. Like, it's
You can't keep it away forever unless the negative was accidentally burned before anyone can see it.
Right.
And then Weston Eckley says he actually agrees with that Brokeback Mountain, although he wouldn't call it overlooked. And like I said, you could make an argument for Brokeback Mountain just like you could for Crash. It's not, you know.
You could make an argument for a lot of those movies that were nominated that year.
The next one, The Color Purple in 1985.
That didn't win?
Movie that won, Out of Africa.
Oh.
Director Steven Spielberg and based on a Pulitzer Prize-winning novel by Alice Walker, this tale of a young African-American woman in the early 20th century lost the big prize to Sidney Pollack's romantic drama Out of Africa. Peppered with brilliant performances from Whoopi Goldberg, Oprah Winfrey, and Danny Glover, The Color Purple is one of Spielberg's most accomplished and worthwhile films. It's particularly notable for being the filmmaker's first real foray into non-blockbuster material, laying the groundwork for his future films like Empire of the Sun and Schindler's List. It was nominated for 11 Oscars but didn't win any category.
All right, that one I have no...
I did not know that. I've heard
I thought
lot
it won.
Good things about The Color Purple, but for it to be nominated for 11 different Oscars and not win a single one...
Yeah, that
is just astonishing to me. Like, yeah. I haven't even seen the movie, but people, the way people talk about it, like, it's one of those things where you think it at least gets some bone thrown to you.
Yeah.
This next one we're gonna mention is a classic case of a movie didn't win that is now has a better legacy than the movie that won. Fargo. And then they go, movie that won, The English Patient.
Well, no, I've heard a lot of things about The English Patient as well.
Yeah, but Fargo is a lot more well-known now.
Well, yeah, but, you know, I've heard a lot of good things about both of them.
And you know what? I'm not even going to read the paragraph because, listen, the Coen brothers got their due. They wound up winning for No Country for Old Men. So,
yeah.
And Frances McDormand did win Best Actress, and the Coen brothers did win Best Original Screenplay.
So it was one of those things where it's like they didn't win Best Picture, but they won all the other awards they were nominated for.
The next one, High Noon, in 1952. The one that won was The Greatest Show on Earth. Voted number 3 on IGN's Top 25 Westerns, High Noon lost the big... Oh, by the way, way to go into business for yourself, IGN. Lost the big prize to Cecil B. DeMille's circus epic, The Greatest Show on Earth.
It's Cecil B. DeMille!
Yeah.
Yeah, and look, let's face it.
Oh, if you're going to lose to anyone, like...
Yeah, number one,
it's like losing to Scorsese. You're like, all right, I'll take it.
What
were you going to say? Sorry, for
that. Scorsese's eventually mentioned. Yeah, what were you going to say?
I was just saying it's like...
Let me guess, for Raging Bull.
It's like if you play, street ball, and all of a sudden Michael Jordan comes to play, and you lose to him. Are you going to be like, oh, man, I lost? You'll be like... Fuck, I lost to Michael Jordan.
Tables everywhere.
Jesus fucking Christ.
I'd be bragging that.
I set my game up.
I'd be bragging that I lost to Michael Jordan.
Guys, you have no idea. I lost to Michael Jordan. No, I'd be pissed. I'd be flipping tables.
He kicked my ass, bro, but I got to play with
Michael Jordan.
I feel like High Noon, the problem with that movie is this is a time where it was doing things that no one expected for the genre, which didn't help it. And yes, it was sort of passed up, but... At the same time, you have to look at It's the Greatest Show on Earth. Yep. Hello.
The next one, It's a Wonderful Life.
Okay, hold on. That one is bullshit. I'm going to say why It's a Wonderful Life is bullshit. Because no one, not a single fucking person had faith in that movie. No one watched it. The only reason why it's popular is because no one renewed the copyright, and thus it was allowed to be played on TV, and thus everyone saw it every year forever, and that's why people saw it. No one watched it back then. No one gave a shit about it back then. That's not being overlooked. That's no one wanted to see it. And the only reason why it's in our mind now is because it's free, and it gets pumped into our brain all the time. And granted, maybe there's a greater appreciation for it now than back then, but it wasn't overlooked. No one gave a shit.
It was nominated for 5 awards.
So apparently enough people gave a shit.
Okay.
Including Best Picture.
Including Best Picture and Best Director.
And then Cornax is not overlooked movies. It's Best Pictures that didn't win Best Picture. Gotta remember that. So we go to the next page here. And again, so far, like...
Well, we didn't cover the movie it lost to.
Yeah, well...
The Best Years of Our Lives, which...
I don't even know what the movie is.
I honestly have never seen, never heard of. Okay, so I'll give them that one.
All right, the next one... Is a
I didn't know this. I actually
That's iffy. This next one is iffy.
This one I thought this one, but all right.
Granted, I see why Network obviously should have won, but at the same time, Rocky. And I think the problem is they're two different movies that represent two different ideals and two different messages.
Oh, God.
And it depends on what you want.
And not only that.
No, it's not even that. Yeah, it was chosen over Taxi Driver.
Taxi Driver and Network.
Shit.
Oh, Jesus. But the problem
is those are all three really thematically different.
Yeah I know. Things. Which is like, you can say, oh, this should have won, this should have won, but it's like...
I'll say this about Network.
Each one of them was deserving.
Yeah, I'll say this about Network. They probably didn't want to give it to Network because of what it represents.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, that's like...
But there is a lot of politics. And the same thing with Taxi Driver. Because they were both really sort of these irreverent... commentary on like society and things like that, and they didn't want to do that. While Rocky, they were like, oh, we'll give it to Rocky.
Taxi Driver was practically a documentary on New York at the time.
Yeah, and Network is about newscasts and the media.
Exactly. Now,
now, of course, you can watch it and be like, wow, this is really a great commentary on it, but like...
Next is the most hotly debated one of all time. I don't think there's a year for the Oscars that was more debated than this. And that being Raging Bull
and Ordinary People.
And Ordinary People. I think people have talked ad nauseum about this. And,
oh, everybody talks about this one.
And granted, while we're about to do this also.
Ad nauseum, we might add.
Ad nauseum, we might add. Yeah. Scorsese's Best Picture. The reason The Departed won Best Picture and Best Director was because they overlooked Raging Bull. In that year. That's, like, he's pretty much went up for The Departed and Raging Bull is what they should have put on the Oscar. Like, the, sorry, buddy, we should have given you to this over more than 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Because how the fuck does Ordinary People, listen, Ordinary People is a pretty good movie, but it's not fucking Raging Bull.
Yeah.
Scorsese's best directing job. De Niro's best acting performance. It was just, there was nothing bad about that movie. Nothing even below great about Raging Bull. That should have won. And here's how big of a shock it was. Everyone else thought it was going to win too. This movie pretty much saved Scorsese's life. Because if you remember, Scorsese was big... he was big into drugs. And De Niro got him clean to do this movie.
Yeah.
So, Scorsese was directing this as if it might be his last movie, and you can tell, because it was just...
He put all into it.
All into it, exactly. And then, since then, he's been doing a lot of passion projects, which is fantastic, but...
Yeah.
Oh, it was great. I love that he just loves movies, and he does all the passion stuff. It's great.
Exactly. It's what you should do at that point in your career. You shouldn't just be, trying to make a paycheck.
Basically,
Spielberg, Lucas.
At this point, I think Scorsese, because Scorsese kind of owes his career, and I don't mean as in like, oh, this actor made his. I mean, he kind of owes his life and career to Robert De Niro, and I don't mean because they work together, but because De Niro got him clean and got him working on Raging Bull, and this is the movie that just sort of lit a fire under his ass.
Yep. And you know what, too? You know the funny part, though? That's in return for Scorsese. De Niro kind of owes Scorsese, too, because it was because of Mean Streets that got him cast as the young Vito Corleone in The Godfather 2. The ironic part was...
they're going to be best friends for life.
Yeah. And you're, the funny part is, it was because of The Godfather Part 2 that De Niro was cast as Travis Bickle.
So your movie got me cast in that movie, and that movie got me cast in this movie from you.
Yeah, because what happened was, for those who don't know this story, De Niro was so like acclaimed from The Godfather Part 2 and won the Oscar, the producers of Taxi Driver decided originally it was going to be Harvey Keitel playing Bickle and De Niro playing the pimp.
Interesting.
The producers. Because, like, at the time...
I don't know if De Niro had that look for the pimp.
It would have been...
Harvey Keitel did.
Yeah.
But...
it would have been completely different, but...
yeah, it probably would have been different. De Niro is De Niro. He probably would have made it work, but just thinking of what that movie became, I think it worked.
Exactly. But like I said, though, the producers wanted De Niro as the main role because they could, you know, kind of get the rub from the Oscar win. From The Godfather Part 2. So, and at first Scorsese protested a little bit, not too much, because he liked De Niro also. But he was kind of like, well, it's weird, because up until that point, his leading actor was Harvey Keitel.
Yeah.
So
I'm just, like, reluctantly just like, oh, no, please don't. Oh, okay, I guess I'll take him. That's what I imagine. It's like, oh, no, I don't, okay, I'll take him.
Yeah. So the next one, you know, like I said, we talked about that movie ad nauseum. The next one, The Right Stuff, the movie that won Terms of Endearment.
Okay.
Yeah, you could kind of, I mean.
I've heard more things about Terms of Endearment than The Right Stuff.
Yeah.
Honestly, and this is bad Cornax, because I collect movies, I collect DVDs, and this is how it's bad Cornax. This is the first time I've heard of The Right Stuff. Terms of Endearment, I've heard a lot more about.
I've heard of The Right Stuff, but like you said, it's just it hasn't really stood the test of time like Terms of Endearment.
Yeah, this is one where it would have been, if it was The Right Stuff won and Terms of Endearment didn't, I would have been like, what the fuck is this movie? Yeah, I don't see how that happened.
Yeah.
This is a case where it's like, I see how this happened.
Yes, and since we all pretty much agree that that one was BS, we're going to move to the next one that I full-heartedly agree with. Saving Private Ryan, movie that won Shakespeare in Love.
Yeah, you know what? I've heard things about Shakespeare in Love, but nothing near
nothing compared to Saving Private Ryan.
Yeah, and I've seen Saving Private Ryan, especially that first when they land on Normandy.
That thing is iconic.
Holy shit, that's...
And the last couple minutes of the movie.
Oh, God, yeah.
Like.
No, the whole movie.
The whole movie in general.
Let's be real here.
Yeah, the whole movie, but what really hits everything home
is the last,
the very end when old Private Ryan asks if he led a good life.
Yeah, ugh.
And then you get I've seen people make parodies where it's like, well, Dad, it's seven guys and, you know, you're one guy. I mean, I don't know if it was, you know, you live kind of good, but I mean, is it worth it? I mean, you're just one guy, it's seven guys and,
granted, one of them was Vin Diesel, but one of them was Tom Hanks. Let's be honest.
Yeah.
So, listen, Matt Damon, you better
make... Hashtag spoilers.
Oh, it this was 98. If you haven't seen it by now...
I know. That's why I'm joking.
Oh, well, Hammy is still around, so there's a chance he hasn't seen it.
Wait. It's been forever since we brought up his list.
Yes, and we'll bring it up tomorrow on Brain Stew.
Good boy.
With Hot Tub Joe Coletta Time Machine.
Oh, boy.
So, we got someone else calling in.
Oh, boy.
Hi, Scrambler.
Hey, guys.
What's up, buddy? How was the game?
Have you guys gotten to 94 yet?
We're actually getting there now.
Oh, one second. Let me kill tune in.
All right. So, next one, 94. The Shawshank Redemption, movie that won, Forrest Gump.
I don't know.
It's Forrest Gump.
Wait, you're going to count Shawshank Redemption as the bigger disappointment because Pulp Fiction should have won that year.
Yeah, that's what the list is saying.
Yeah. He even points out Pulp Fiction, and yet, yeah, honestly, if I were to go between two, obviously Forrest Gump was going to win because that has Oscar written all over it, let's be honest. It does. There's certain
it's
movies.
Not a, it's not that a you know film. The, it's not a film, it's a movie. The other two are films that are going to stand the test of time, and Forrest Gump enrages me. I can't even watch that movie. I think it's a retard movie for idiots.
I'm not saying that Forrest Gump is the greatest thing ever, but let's be honest, it has everything the Academy wants. Whether you like it or not.
It's an Oscar bait movie.
It's pretty much like, you know, it's pretty much like Nat King Cole's daughter sing his songs. That's Grammy bait.
Yeah. And again, though, like that same year, Shawshank Redemption was also nominated, Pulp Fiction, Quiz Show, Four Weddings and a Funeral.
Yeah, that was one of the like tightest years, I would say.
Yeah. And let's face it, you could have easily made an argument for all four of them winning over Forrest Gump. You know, either Pulp Fiction or Shawshank. I mean, I don't know which one I would say.
And you know what? And the book Forrest Gump was so much – it's kind of more badass because in the book, he's a swearing retard who goes into space with a monkey.
It's weird, though. Like, I don't know which one I would –
Come on. Tell me that's not awesome.
It's fantastic. I don't know which one I would have had win because I love the Shawshank Redemption and I love Pulp Fiction.
Mm-hmm.
Like both...
Well, one was an original screenplay and one was adapted. So does that give one the edge?
Sway your vote?
That doesn't sway my vote because Raging Bull was also adapted.
No, I'm not saying so. It should. I was just I was just asking if it does because I mean they love to give Tarantino a writing award. They're like, here, let's give Tarantino this award so we don't have to give him any other awards.
Which is, by the way, is completely passive aggressive on the Academy's part. I think. Completely passive aggressive. But yeah, Forrest Gump should not have, like, realistically, as a movie and as a complete film, should not have won. But I can understand why it won, because like Ariel said, and like we all pretty much agreed, it is Oscar bait.
Oh. And so was, I mean, 12 Years a Slave, you guys were talking about it earlier. That's the same type of thing. It's an Oscar bait movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because also you have to, there's also that concern of, well, if we don't nominate for anything, well, what will people say?
Right, and Fassbender should win Best Supporting because of everything else he's done. But, I mean, I haven't seen 12 Years a Slave, but he's a fantastic, fantastic actor. If you haven't seen Shame, you got to watch it because it's a great movie.
Yeah.
Now, all right, well... I'm still warming up from this hockey game. It was brutal.
Not a problem, buddy. The next one. So, what are you staying on? Or
I'm gonna jump out because I don't have my board or computer set up. I just Skyped in on my phone. I hope it doesn't sound like dog shit. But
right.
I just 94 is my most. It goes 94, and then it goes 80, and then 75. Those are my three big ones. Actually, I'm sorry. My first one is 39. The Sound of Music winning over Wizard of Oz to me is a travesty.
Which we're going to get to, but the next one is one of mine that I think should have easily won that award, that Best Picture award. In 1951, A Streetcar Named Desire loses to An American in Paris.
Which is a tragedy because, you know, but at the same time, I see why. I see why. Tennessee Williams, you know, didn't exactly make something that was palatable towards everyone in the public. And this is the 50s. Let's be honest. Streetcar Named Desire, Tennessee Williams. It's not going to get the recognition that we're only going to agree now that it should have.
By the way, if there was a year where On the Waterfront didn't win, I would have been going nuclear.
Or oh, yeah, nuclear. 55?
Yeah, if it didn't win
nuclear.
That.
Nuclear.
You're not George W. Bush.
Nuka-Cola-er.
Yeah.
Nuka-Cola.
Dicks. Nuka-Cola.
Sunset Sarsaparilla. I would be going apeshit if I found out that On the Waterfront didn't win that Best Picture.
Oh, of course.
You would have gone apeshit in 1955? What are you, magic?
No, read Wikipedia for that.
Oh, man, I'm so 1955 angry.
I would be like, what the fuck is wrong with you, 1955? For fuck's sakes. Get ahead of the times. But yeah, you know, I think A Streetcar Named Desire should have won this over the Gene Kelly musical named An American in Paris.
I think Scrambler's still playing off the bit from when he was hosting.
What's that?
Well, in the chat, it says the guest who became known as Scram said, "Jailbait is the best bait. Fuck isolate."
I was just agreeing with Red Sox.
Next one, by the way, Sunset Boulevard in 1950, losing to All About Eve. I guess that's, you know, that's the one that coined Ready for My Close-Up.
Oh, yeah. You know what? Sunset Boulevard. Yeah, I can see that one. That should have won.
Yes, and next one is The Ten Commandments with Daniel Bryan playing Moses.
Oh, my God. You know what? It's definitely the robe that makes it.
Yeah.
The red sort of maroonish robe.
Just picture
him
with the
one
commandments.
You could go either way with it.
You could.
They were both deserving in their own ways. And to say one deserved it over the other is difficult. They both deserved it, however.
Yeah, and just now you're going to picture Moses with the commandments going chanting yes.
I'm just imagining yes, yes, yes on the front of that robe now.
Yes! The next one, and this is one that I don't agree with.
Look, To Kill a Mockingbird was a wonderful film. It was a great adaptation.
It was a top-notch
movie.
Don't
fucking tell me that it deserved the award over Lawrence of Arabia.
Yeah, and like this guy, and the writer even puts it, it's hard to mourn a loss to the brilliant Lawrence of Arabia. It's just a shame that To Kill a Mockingbird didn't come out a year later. And again, this is, like I said, this is best movie.
Well, what won the next year?
I could check that.
Check that.
Talk about the movies while I check that.
Well, To Kill a Mockingbird is just, you know, it's simple.
It's a great adaptation, and it's a great film.
And it's based off of a great book.
I mean, yeah, they're both so influential.
Lawrence of Arabia is, like...
Also so influential.
Well, no, in my opinion, it was, at that time, it would have been modern day at that time. It was a modern day epic, like an ancient Greek epic. Yeah. And here it was. And even the film length displays that. I mean, granted,
yeah, it's, what is
they
it? It's like
340.
Arabia is like 3. Arabia is like 3.
I'm back. I don't know what the fuck just happened. What happened was, for whatever reason,
your computer did some things again.
No, we're still live.
No.
Yeah,
but I know that for a while
there was there was a hiccup in the internet.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
So we're back
still
on.
Live.
Yeah, we're back on,
and we can all hear each other.
So
yeah, I was like, what the hell?
Punchy, turn off BitTorrent.
BitTorrent's not on. It wasn't the browsers. It was the, for whatever reason, there was a little hiccup in the internet. Relax. We don't need to
James?
Talk about
it. Yes. Did the internet break?
Yes. Stop watching porn.
Yes, because I do that while I'm watching.
I'm watching the Western Echo bikini GIF that's in chat, which is hilarious.
I thank JJ.
So anyway, the next year's Oscar field for Best Picture that he thought the Ten Commandments should have come out during included.
No, that was To Kill a Mockingbird that we were looking up. Remember?
Yeah. Oh yes, To Kill a Mockingbird, which I'm going to find now. Oh yes, To Kill a Mockingbird.
Hereafter, that was released. What won Best Picture?
All right, I'm trying to find it here. Give me a second. Relax.
Oh, what year was it? 61 and 62?
So, no, the movie was 60. It was for the 62 awards. And the 63 field included Tom Jones, America, America, Cleopatra, How the West Was Won, and, yeah, you know what? To Kill a Mockingbird would have easily won this field.
Yeah, actually. Okay, this is one where I'm going to say, let's agree with the IGN writer. Yeah. If that movie had come out a year later, it would have won.
They're probably like, oh, fuck. Can we just delay the picture until next year? For fuck's sake. Jesus Christ. Let's release To Kill a Mockingbird next year. Oh, man. Wow. That was a tactical error on their part. And actually, the year before, it was a West Side Story, Fanny, The Guns of Navarone, The Hustler, and Judgment at Nuremberg. You could have made an argument that field, too.
Oh.
You could have made an argument.
61 is, that's a much stronger year than the other one.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But regardless.
So you could have made the argument, but it would have been much easier for them to get in 1963.
And the last one.
This one, I'm just like, no, this is you trying to be a dick again. You're trying to get everyone riled up. Because it's The Wizard of Oz. And look, The Wizard of Oz is a great film, but let's face it, it was not Best Picture material.
It was not Gone with the Wind.
It was not Gone with the fucking Wind.
Gone with the Wind.
I mean, yeah, it's a great movie. It's fucking amazing. It's The Wizard of fucking Oz, but it's not Gone with the Wind.
It's not Best Picture material. I'm sorry. It isn't.
I have to disagree. First of all, it's one of my favorite movies. And if you want to say that Ghostbusters had good effects for the 80s, look what Wizard of Oz did in 1939.
Look, I'm not saying that it didn't have great effects, but do effects make it the best picture?
No, I'm not saying they make it the best picture. I think everything makes it a great picture. Plus, it also had songs, so...
I'm not arguing that it isn't
a great picture. Hey, guys, trust us, we're debating.
I'm not saying it's not a great picture. I love the film. I'm, however, saying... it's not the best picture.
I don't know. I'd Gone with the Wind.
No, please.
Gone with the Wind is deserving of that win, regardless of what, you know.
Right.
So, but again, though, like, in other years, most of the years in that decade, it probably would have won. But then again,
what won in 40, Marty?
Yeah, let me check that.
I think 40 was Marty.
Probably.
And obviously that one was Oscar bait because of Ernest Borgnine's eyebrows.
No, 40 was Rebecca.
Oh, I'm sorry. It was
Rebecca. That was Hitchcock.
I apologize.
Rebecca. That was Hitchcock.
Aim.
I don't know. 39's my biggest. Is my biggest. I'm the most disappointed over Wizard of Oz because I think it's a great movie that everyone can agree is a great movie. And
I agree. However,
yeah, I don't know.
Between Wizard of Oz and Gone with the Wind, I know which one I'm choosing.
Gone with the Wind. Clearly,
I'm sad for you.
Frankly, my dear, I don't give a damn.
look at this guy.
And there's a lot of other ones you could kind of make arguments for. I think the hardest field to pick a winner from was 75, one of the hardest ones. One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest won, which makes sense. But there was also Dog Day Afternoon, Jaws, and Nashville in that group.
Yeah, that was a strong year.
Oh, the 70s had a few strong years in there. I mean,
70, what was 74 was Chinatown.
So yeah, 74 was Chinatown, The Godfather Part Two, The Conversation.
Yeah, that
Lenny.
That was a crazy year. Actually, I think 69 to 75 or 76 were just amazing years for film in general. There was just solid shit coming out.
Yes, and then 76 was the year that Rocky gave the deep dicking to Network and Taxi Driver.
Yeah, there's so many good films that came out then. I mean.
Or what about Kramer versus Kramer beating Apocalypse Now?
In 70?
79.
Oh, 79, I'm sorry. Apocalypse Now I wouldn't say it's underrated because I don't think there's anybody that denies that it's a good movie, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. But it's better than Kramer versus Kramer, in my opinion.
Interesting.
I don't.
Yeah, wow.
I'm just thinking Kramer versus Kramer. You know, I'm thinking of a different movie. Shit.
Well,
Kramer vs. Kramer is Meryl Streep and Dustin Hoffman having the custody battle in court.
The Last Temptation of Christ was not nominated at all. Holy shit. I thought that would have been worthy to. Or here's one, Dances with Wolves beating out Fellas. Yeah.
Dances with Wolves is so long and boring.
Yeah, it's really bad.
And then there was 91, which made sense, Silence of the Lambs winning, but it also had the rare Disney Best Picture nomination.
Ooh.
Here's one for you guys to think of. Schindler's List won in 93. It won big.
Schindler's List
Jurassic Park could have easily destroyed that year without Schindler's List.
Yeah. Now, here's the thing, though.
That's funny. Spielberg had two movies in.
Here's the thing, though. The original director picked for Schindler's List was Martin Scorsese.
Interesting.
Him and Spielberg. I forget what Scorsese took instead of Schindler's List, but he swapped projects with Spielberg.
I can't remember what it was that he took.
But I'm looking back at
93. Well, he went Goodfellas was 90, and then Casino was 95. What did he do between the two?
Took a break.
I think it might have been Cape Fear.
Yeah, because Cape Fear would have been like. I thought Cape Fear was like 91, but yeah, it could have been Cape Fear.
Hey, remember when Chicago beat Gangs of New York?
Yes.
And
shut up. Chicago's great.
And Lord of the Rings.
Not Gangs of New York.
Yeah, it's not Gangs of New York. Let's see. Wow. All right, I get why Return of the King won, but...
Return of the King is amazing.
Yeah, it beat some pretty good movies, though.
Return of the King, so...
It's not as wide open as the other one, but... And then you did basically another reason why The Departed got the wins it got. Million Dollar Baby beating out The Aviator.
Ugh.
And that led to The Departed beating out a Clint Eastwood movie.
Yeah.
Crash beating... It didn't just beat Brokeback Mountain. It beat Capote, Good Night and Good Luck, and Munich, which you could make arguments for all of them.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would pick Munich that year.
There's a few good movies that year. Holy shit. The Departed was pretty much a lock. I don't think a lot of people expected it to win Best Picture. But it wound up winning. Everyone knew that it was going to win Best Director. And then No Country for Old Men, let's face it. What else was there? I mean, there were some great movies, but...
What? What are you talking about?
Saying,
No Country for Old Men was the same year as There Will Be Blood.
I know,
Before the Devil Knows You're Dead.
I was getting to that.
Oh, okay. Well, you said it, and I was like, wait, are we forgetting these other two great films that came out that year?
I was getting to that.
Sorry.
Hashtag jump the gum scrambler. Wow.
I remember
my mouth doesn't want to work.
I'm just going off my head here. I don't have a computer in front of me, so I'm not looking at your list. So if I jump ahead, if I do that, I'm just going by what I know.
I'm just going by some of the movies I see now. 2008's the year where they're like, fuck this, we're going to expand it next year because people were pissed off that The Dark Knight wasn't nominated. And that was the year Slumdog Millionaire beat out Benjamin Button, Frost Nixon, Milk, and The Reader.
That was a great year, though. Let's
be
real.
That was a great
year. Yeah. But,
big arguments for literally all of those movies.
The next year, the hilarious trolling of the Oscar voters.
Yeah.
The Hurt Locker beating out Avatar.
Avatar is not a Best Picture film.
I fully support that.
No, no. Yeah. I say trolling because it's fantastic, because of all the big Avatar fans were like, this is the greatest picture I've ever seen. I want to be a Na'vi. And they're still butthurt about the Hurt Locker beating out Avatar.
Do you know there are people who – have you heard of this thing called Otherkin?
What?
Do I want to?
Otherkin are like people who believe that they're – you know how there are people who are a man in a woman's body? Some people believe they're a tiger in a human's body.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
Or a dragon in a person's body. There are people called Navikin who believe they are Na'vi in a human's body.
You know what? I hope they jump off a cliff or eat. But, like, if you look at the field in 2009, every movie not named Avatar would have deep-dicked Avatar as far as winning that award goes. So...
Oh, Jesus Christ. For once, Dennis says a movie isn't complete shit or just okay, and it's gotta be fucking Avatar.
No, I agree with what he said, though. He said it didn't suck. Was it the best picture? No, but the film was a technological breakthrough. It was a technological breakthrough. It did a lot of really amazing stuff with technology. I didn't think it sucked. I mean, it's entertaining to watch. Do I think it should have been nominated for Best Picture? No. It should have gotten technical awards, which it did. It should not be Best Picture because it is basically a generic.
It got what it deserved.
Yes. It was a generic, like, film. There's nothing remarkable about it. It's generic.
It was a blockbuster.
Yeah, it's a generic blockbuster that's a bit Pocahontas. It's Pocahontas in a generic blockbuster. That's all it is.
It's Dances with Blue Cats.
Yeah, no, it is. It's Dances with Wolves / Pocahontas / Fern Gully in a blockbuster 3D animated world. Technologically, it's astounding. It's amazing. It's gorgeous.
But it is essentially Fern Gully with Smurfs.
Yeah, it was worth it to see an IMAX 3D, but Best Picture movie. And the fact that people literally look at it and are so upset that it didn't win is astounding.
There are people that suffered depression because they realized that, you know, that world. What was
they
the world
They had make
called?
Terrible choices?
No. What was the world called that Avatar took
Pandora?
Place? Pandora.
Pandora.
They realized Pandora was not a real place and they could never go there, and they experienced such depression.
Yeah, well.
Such
oh my God.
Depression that they
oh
had to
Oh my
get
God.
Treated.
Who? Jesus. No. Oh my well, God.
Listen,
no.
Listen. You know what, though? I'd be depressed, too, if I pictured this fantastic world.
You can make it in a theme park.
Yes, you can. Yeah, but
you can make it in Universal Studios. Are you fucking kidding me?
Yes, yes, they're not kidding
you. Are
you
that upset? Oh my God!
Hold on.
You should kill yourself.
Well, they did, but
really good. That's
oh, wait,
ridiculous.
Wait, I found.
But here's the thing,
I
though.
I found a live journal.
Listen,
for
you
the Na'vi kid.
Oh my God! No.
Hold on.
Not yet.
Save it, Cornax. Because
hometree.livejournal.com.
I'm sorry. Okay, you know what? Maybe that was a little extreme. Maybe I shouldn't be like, oh, you should kill yourself or you did kill yourself. I mean, that's kind of sad. Obviously, there's something wrong with you if you already did it based around this. But, like, oh my God. Are you fucking kidding me?
I think I have found.
It's a theme park. You could make a fucking theme park.
I think I found something that pisses Ariel off more than bronies.
God.
Na'vis.
Fucking Avatar does not deserve the acclaim that it fucking gets.
I don't get the whole thing about being on Pandora. I don't get the whole thing about being on Pandora. I can't listen to a
song about
an app. I'm
sorry. No, but any movie that where literally you can predict the dialogue that they're going to say and what's going to happen shot for shot is not worthy of Best Picture.
Also, Unobtainium has nothing on Adamantium.
Oh my God. I rolled my eyes so hard I saw the back of my fucking skull.
Oh my God.
You like... really.
It's not obtaining. Are you fucking. Oh my God. What was that? A draft one and you couldn't think of anything else? Literally anything else is better than that.
Come on, James Cameron. You've been there before.
James Cameron set in the bar.
My God. Oh my God.
Okay, react to it off mic. React to it off mic.
No. You have to see this.
No, I don't want to see this.
It's a new blog called I'm starting a blog that will highlight some of the outrages I've seen posted here and elsewhere. The Navi Anti-Defamation League.
Oh, God.
It includes a quote. If
don't
a man,
call them cats, watch.
If man hasn't discovered something that he will die for, he isn't fit to live. Martin Luther King Jr. I'm hoping to start a broader discussion on what it's like in the initial states of a new religious movement. It's a religious movement. And the challenges we experience from allies and enemies. I detailed some ways you can help in my profile, but what I need now is some starting material. Where have you seen the worst anti-Navitism, anti-fictionkin speech happening?
Wait, oh no, really? Hold on. All right, here, is there a way to respond to that, Cornax?
Oh.
I want
there
you
is a comment feed.
You make
but
account?
I haven't gotten to the best part.
All right.
See, someone commented, okay, this seems to be a bit of an overkill. And this is what the original poster replied with. I'm sure that's what the German civilians thought to themselves of the warning signs before Kristallnacht happened.
All right, you know what? You know what, Cornax? You know what I want you to do? I want you to apply for to be able to comment on there. And then what I'm going to have
I
you
don't
do
have
is
a
go,
live journal.
All right, well, sign up for live journal and go. I'm seeing
besides,
a lot
this
of
is from 2010, but this is hilarious.
Listen, I'm sure this idiot still maintains.
Yeah, there's no way, dude. Nobody really uses live journal right now.
Let me see. Hold on.
You got to go to the Tumblr. Nobody's really using
recent
live journal.
Recent entries. The most recent entry was from February 8th, 2010.
God damn it. I was going to have you comment and say something like, yeah, I'm hearing a lot of anti-Navitism going on this show that's on morelikeradio.com Saturdays from midnight to 2. Mm. We could have gotten a plug and got some of these idiots in there.
Right.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Wait, this is great. Someone said to the original poster, you realize, of course, that reacting too strongly to what is essentially name-calling will only further encourage them. I might be being a little victim-blaming here, but honestly, the more of a fuss you make about the more criticism you write, especially when making statements that seem to trivialize the genocide of a people. And this is the original poster's reply, I am not afraid of their attacks. If it leads to martyrdom, I have served AWA well.
Ew!
Oh my God, no.
Can we get his IP?
My head is in my hands. I can't. Oh my God, no. Why?
Can someone give him computer aid so he can never post on the internet again?
Oh my God.
Ow.
Can we find him home tree and just hang him from it?
I believe that's called a racial lynching area.
No, that's not what I meant at all.
I know, but that's what they would call it.
That's someone who thinks he's a Navi, so no one's going to give a shit.
It's racism against Navis, and it's a hate crime.
They're not real!
But they're fiction. Not real. They feel the Navi spirit within them.
No, I don't know. It's not real. It's not fucking real. It's a bunch of hippie shit.
Western Echo, I don't know. I think he's making some good points.
Oh my God, I can't even.
And this is why you cannot defend.
Someone said, wait, what? You're not being persecuted. You know that, right? Original poster's reply, where are you people coming from? You have no Navi connections. Am I going to have to teach Phantom Wank a lesson next?
Break back, make you humble country way.
Oh my God.
Oh my God. Someone said, you still haven't explained your earlier comment. Do you honestly think that being told that you are delusional for thinking you are a 7-foot-tall blue cat person is on par with the Holocaust? I'm speaking
good. I'm glad people are calling him out as bullshit. What an idiot.
Hold on. I'm speaking from the sociological point of view. Holocausts don't happen overnight. There's a genesis, and that genesis begins by belittling and denying a race their identity and pride, just as you have all been doing. Yeah. Now I ask why. Why is it so important to you to attack us and tell us what we are and aren't? That evil in you is the genesis of every genocide in history, and I'm taking a stand.
You know what else that genesis has? It has the only home video copy of – or home copy of Mortal Kombat that had a blood code.
Oh, my God.
Like, oh, my God.
Oh, God.
I just
– Oh, my God.
I'm enraged now.
Why
Oh, my God. If you go down until the comments
– I just
– Oh, wow. This is what I find funny. Despite, you know, the other kid being weird – apparently, he still has a problem with furries.
Wow.
But
how interesting.
Someone says, teach them a lesson. How exactly? What are you going to do? Call the internet police? By writing articles that exposes the people behind the hate machine. I'm already prepping an article on furries. I can easily fit in Phantom Wank for next Tuesday. I have plenty of notes. I think that says it all.
You see, this is what happens when a movie that's not even great. It's all right.
Yeah. See, Dennis, see what you support.
It's a technologically great movie.
No, I'm not going that far.
But
nope.
As shallow of a plot as can be.
Oh, my God. No. Okay, when I was watching this movie, here's how shallow that fucking plot is. I was watching that movie, right, and I'm sitting there in the theater, and I was like, oh, this is the part where Michelle Rodriguez is on the pilot team, and then she's going to go to hell with this and turn around. Literally happened. And I was like, oh, good. This movie is totally worthy of Oscars.
Totes.
I hate so much.
Totes.
So much about who this person is. To the point that I want to find this person.
Oh, I can just look.
I also don't want to, because I'm 90% sure I would find them in a fucking blue skin suit with a fucking tail.
Actually,
they'd be tucking it in between their legs. I'd fuck me.
What they do is mostly paint up their body and then do, I think they wear some prosthetics.
Nope.
So.
Let's see. Where? Navi can.
Can these Navi idiots just go away?
It's been like 4 years.
Yeah, good point. They probably are gone. They probably moved on to something else.
I'm pretty sure they probably jumped to like something else.
Something
ridiculous.
Something even more ridiculous. Yeah, but I remember when people were like having the Facebook photos with Photoshop to look like Navi. I'm like, are you fucking serious? Really? That's what you're going to do?
No, you know what? You know what happened? They're probably bronies.
Oh, my God.
Good point.
Oh, my God.
They probably jumped to be bronies. That's probably what they are now.
I literally
wouldn't be shocked.
And I can only imagine what Cornax just found. What did you find, Cornax?
It's just his douche shilling.
You know how I mentioned he was originally in that post talking about forming the Navi Anti-Defamation League?
Yep.
Did he actually do it?
I found the blog.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
Great. On Tumblr? Is it on Tumblr?
Or is it
on
LiveJournal?
It's
on
LiveJournal.
Of course
it's on LiveJournal, because nobody fucking uses LiveJournal.
And
I mean, I guess people do, but...
Oh, boy.
Oh.
I can't imagine this post that going well, because... Well, just scroll down, and you'll see someone... The post is titled... I don't know, it's not titled anything, but just go down to the comment by someone named Origami Setunai. It's the first comment on this post.
Origami Jones.
Yeah. Let me be blunt. As much as I love the film, and I have seen it perhaps more times than was really worth it.
I own this movie.
Let's get something clear. The Navi are essentially a trite stereotype. Yes, I like the race.
They really are. Look,
yes,
I own this movie. I enjoy watching some of it if I shut my fucking brain off through the whole time. But, like, dude.
Yes,
there is nothing life-changing about this.
It was a wonderful movie, but it's fictional. In fact, being part Native American myself, I find in some ways this Navi fanaticism insulting. Why? Because James Cameron basically took a sampling of several Native American tribes and their belief system, threw them in a blender, and chose to call it Na'vi.
Yep.
I find it a little public outcry against defamation, yeah, discrimination of the Na'vi when most
and there's actual things, yeah.
When most of you didn't bat an eye when the exact same thing happened to Native Americans, who are still dealing with discrimination, who did have genocide committed on them, who did have their land stripped from them. They did, and Na'vi, I'm sorry, are fictional. So it's outrageous to me that you feel more sympathy for a fictional race than actual human beings who suffered those indignities portrayed in the film, and to a degree, still are. Please don't misunderstand. I'm not trying to get on my high horse or be judgmental of those who identify themselves as Na'vi, even if basically all you're really doing is emulating a system of indigenous human belief systems. Great spirit equals AWA, basically. I can't get my brain around is all of you whiners going, wah, I want to live on Pandora. Wah, Earth is ugly. Earth is beautiful. The only reason it is not is because what humans have done to it. Please get a grip and a wake-up call and realize that Earth, like it or not, is your Pandora. And only exists by a planet that does not and will never exist and only exists by virtue of CGI, why not help the planet you live on? It needs your care and compassion just as much. Please don't think this is just some more quote-unquote hate speech, though chances are you'll take it exactly that way and predictably delete this comment. I've got nothing against people who think they're naughty, although you should. You should very much, poster, even if I think it's a little silly. Just want to put those 2 cents in.
I'm glad this poster posted.
Yeah.
That makes that person happy.
And the funny part is, like I said, seeing Avatar fans who clearly were pissed off that it lost the Hurt Locker, writing reviews on Amazon for the Hurt Locker. Like, you can tell it's a butthurt Avatar fan saying, oh, it's a bad movie, it's so boring, it's not Avatar. Should not
Hurt Locker is great.
Hurt Locker is...
They can fuck themselves.
Unless you like Avatar or your name is Mitch Heil, Avatar is not great, but Hurt Locker is. Red Sox in chat, trust us, we love Na'vi.
Great.
Wait. This is the last post on that Na'vi Anti-Defamation League.
I'm so done with the shit.
This is the last post on the blog. You know what, guys? Seriously, go outside. Before you furries take the time to write me one more essay on why we can all get along, take the time to read the last 3 entries where I said I was a troll. You're wasting your time here, but it does prove my point about internet conflicts. The actual issue doesn't matter. It's all about catharsis. Now wait. Go back and if you went back and read the other entries, he's not saying he's a troll and that he was faking being a Na'vikin. He's a troll in that he was fucking with furries for the sake of fucking with furries. He didn't claim he wasn't Na'vikin. And his whole point is just to say, despite all you furries saying that you can get along with me, I don't like you. Go away.
He's a fucking brony.
He's a fucking weirdo.
Totes a brony.
He's totally a brony.
And he's wearing my...
Yeah. He also probably believes that girls can't possibly like anything.
What he believes is that babies are born by queefing on a man's face.
Apparently.
Hashtag South Park.
They queef on a face.
The best thing to come out of that movie was Zoe Saldana.
Yeah.
That's it. Like, and she went on to do better movies.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, Guardians of the Galaxy, which is, in my opinion, the better choice.
Star Trek, even.
Yeah, Star Trek, too. I'm just saying.
Na'vikin would disagree with you there.
They can go suck a dick. I don't give a shit.
They can eat 5 bags of them, actually.
Yeah, you know what they also can do? Dance around in their moss.
No moss.
They can go cry about Pandora. I don't give a shit.
Can they, please? Well, with that, we are going to go take a quick commercial break.
So no songs. Angry.
Give us a chance to kind of get over the enragement that just happened.
Also, I want to talk about Lost in Translation and her.
All right, yes, we will talk about Lost in Translation and her. And
how they relate to each other.
All right, and then I have a few other things I'll talk about, a movie I want to talk about, too.
Right.
So we will be right back. Like I said, we're only going to play commercials. I'm not going to play any music or anything. So it's going to be a quick one, just so we can get some ads out there for the for the sponsors.
Great.
Hey, listeners. Yes, that means you. Missed your favorite More Like Radio shows live? No problem. Just go to morelikeradio.com/downloads. That's morelikeradio.com/downloads. More Like Radio's RSS feed works with your iThings, Zooms, Androids, Windows Phone, and anything else that can subscribe to an RSS feed. If you're so awesome that you only get your podcasts from iTunes, you can subscribe to our feed in iTunes by clicking the Subscribe to iTunes link right on the Downloads page. So what are you waiting for? Download More Like Radio podcasts and subscribe to our feed now. Yes, right now. Do it.
Many of us grew up reading the works of Jules Verne and books like Treasure Island, great classic fantasy novels. I love reading fantasy, but most of the fantasy novels released today read like a role-playing game. I'm interested in characters and stories when reading fantasy novels, and I found a fantasy novel written with the story and the characters as the focus. The book is titled Daughter of Vengeance, and the author is David Timrick. David Timrick is a self-published author who has written several books, and they are all top-rated on Amazon. Daughter of Vengeance is a story about a young lady who's thrust into a world of espionage, betrayal, and murder. A survivor at heart, she befriends a master assassin who takes her as his apprentice. After years of training and careful planning, she begins her life as one of the king's many spies. Unknown to her, a plot has slowly been unraveling, which will not only destroy the fragile peace of the kingdom, but could descend the world into chaos and war. Can Michelle rise above the shortcomings and failures of her predecessors and set right the wrongs done centuries before? And will her life be the ultimate price she pays for the sins of others? You'll have to read Daughter of Vengeance by David Timrick to find out. So visit his website, davidtimrick.com, to buy your copy today. David Timrick, T-E-M-R-I-C-K, davidtimrick.com. Daughter of Vengeance is available on Kindle and in paperback.
Unsigned Hype, every Tuesday night, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 Pacific, on morelikeradio.com. It's hosted by Sir Darkside, a.k.a. at Darkside Rules on Twitter. Check out the show for dope interviews, exclusive releases from artists such as Brother Ali, Mally, Kelly Mays, Lex Leosis, MOA, and Aesop Rock. It doesn't get better than this. Every Tuesday night on morelikeradio.com is the Unsigned Hype.
Unsigned Hype. Frontline, never known as flurry. Zero dark friends, minutes or fuck the stepchild. A boat lunch jumped over plunging net lines. Up the side, tongue tied, hungry enzymes. Devolved in a morphman, munching textiles.
Talk Radio Meltdown. He just wrote a song, put it on an album. The album came out, went to number one, and a few weeks later, he's like, oh yeah, by the way, I'm gay, and if you want to know why, listen to this particular track.
Oh,
everyone did, and they found out. It's like, oh, this song's apparently about how much he wants to fuck a dude. Okay. That's logical.
Well, with the verse like, I want a dick up my ass repeatedly with balls touching my bum.
Is that really the lyric? I'm not familiar with this band.
Talk Radio Meltdown every Friday from 4 to 6 p.m. Eastern on morelikeradio.com.
Hey everybody, this is Alexa. You can hear my Uncle Sean say terrible things on a Hippo Juice show. Wednesday night from 7 to 9 p.m. Followed by the Red Show from 9 to 11. And now Mark Out Radio with Big T and Dark Fox is on Wednesday too. Join them during their new time slot, 11 to 1 a.m., only on morelikeradio.com.
Hi, this is Anthony Spey.
artist for Zenoscope Entertainment, publisher of Grim Fairy Tales, Oz, and many other great titles. You're listening to More Like Radio.
Yes, we are back after that. Like I said, I promised a quick commercial break. We're here in the Nerd Hour. We're ready to... we're going to discuss some more... You know, it's going to be a movie-themed episode, Audible time. And we're going to go a little... We're going to go a few minutes over. We're not going to go too much over just to make up for the lost time for the technical difficulties. So, sorry, Ariel.
No, it's okay. I'm tired.
Before Ariel gets into the discussion, which I feel like is going to take a good chunk of time because it's about...
Probably not. I haven't seen either.
You haven't? Well, still.
No, I just found something interesting.
All right. Well, like I said, added a bit because I've seen her, so I can base that. Do abuse that as a basis. So, I do want to point out that I'm excited because next week is a movie that I cannot wait to see coming out.
Is it 300?
Huh? What?
I don't know.
What is it?
The Grand Budapest Motel.
Oh.
Or Grand Budapest
Motel.
Oh,
that comes out?
Yeah, I think that unless I was being trolled by Scrambler. Yeah, no, it is out on March. Wait, when the fuck does it come out in the U.S.? The release date was. Let's see here. I'm looking up the release date on Wikipedia now. It's going to be March 7th. Yeah, so it's going to be on the 7th. It's going to come out. Yes, so I cannot wait to see that. It's got a fantastic cast. It's Wes Anderson, so I'm a fan of his movies. It's Wes Anderson, so the cast is going to be insane.
Of course.
He'll hire a new person for a movie, and then that person will just stick on for every subsequent movie from then on.
Yeah.
So, it's going to be a pretty good movie, I think. I am going to get to see the Fantastic Mr. Fox for the first time soon, so there's that.
Cool.
Yes. So, we're going to hear... Let's talk about your article, the article that you found about Lost in Translation and her.
Oh, yeah. I have to actually find the article. But, basically, and... So, her... sorry, I'm just, like... Anyway. Where did I find it? Just talk.
All right. While she's finding... Let's see. Scrambler says he wouldn't troll me. Aw, Scrams. I do want to point out a few things.
So this is from Rotten Tomatoes, I guess.
Rotten Tomatoes?
Never mind. It's just a blog thing.
Oh, it's
what?
A blog There's, thing?
Oh, that's an article.
Well, still, I do got to point out that her was a fantastic...
No, it was literally just a comment section. I needed to find the article. Okay, so, this is from Fandor.com.
Fandor?
Mm-hmm. I'm posting it in the chat. Sofia Coppola and Spike Jonze were married. And she wrote and directed Lost in Translation. He wrote and directed her. So, in 2003, they ended their marriage. And it says, in 2003, Jonze and Sofia Coppola ended their four-year marriage. Amidst the dismissal of many rumors the couple was separating, Jonze reportedly missed the premiere of Coppola's Oscar-winning Lost in Translation. This doesn't mean he didn't see it, they say that, but if you thought they were together, his absence looks cruel. If you knew they were splitting, his absence looks more like a survival tactic. It's just them sort of implying. Anyway, reviews couldn't resist seeing their marital strife telegraphed through their films. Scarlett Johansson's worried newlywed looked like the Coppola's proxy. One review marked on the brand of schlubbiness that made Giovanni Ribisi's neglectful workaholic husband comparable to the director's own. In the context of a film that hangs its sense of unmoored sadness on lonely marriages, these comparisons can't help feeling pointed. So, obviously, Lost in Translation and Her are personal films to both of them. So if you look at Lost in Translation as her sort of looking at her marriage and making a movie essentially about it, which is kind of interesting thematically, With Spike Jonze, he sort of did the same thing with her, but it's like 10 years later and it's sort of his response. So if you kind of look at her using Lost in Translation as feeling like his absence and her feeling of loneliness in the marriage, her is sort of his realizing his failures in it.
Hmm.
Would that be an accurate statement?
Yeah.
Her, he is alone and sort of
alone,
facing things, like, I guess, that he is kind of responsible for being alone.
Yeah, I could see that. I could definitely see that.
So, and a lot of the shots, interestingly enough, do look sort of similar, but not, obviously not directly similar, because that would just be plagiarism, but, like, it looks, it's shot very similarly, and the filter very similar as well. It's sort of just the way that it is, and that's sort of how lonely both of them are.
Yeah, and it's such a good movie, I want to point out her.
I'm going to watch it tomorrow.
Yeah, and it's funny, though, how many people don't even get the point of the movie just because of the trailers or the advertisements. They think it's a guy that falls in love with a phone.
I know, yeah, it's not being sold very.
A fantastic movie, but not being sold very well.
Yeah. So I would say both movies are about human connection.
Yep.
And so that's sort of, what's it, Theodore Twombly? Okay.
Yep. His name. Theodore Twombly, that's the main character in Her.
Yeah. Because he's getting a divorce in the movie.
Yeah, he's in the process of divorcing Rooney Mara.
Yeah. So it's sort of interesting that if you look at them both sort of thematically, that they're essentially responses to each other.
And they both have Scarlett Johansson.
I know, which I actually find it interesting. Like that she's the star of Lost in Translation and she's the voice. Like, she's also the star in Her. Like, it's really interesting to me that they both use the same actress, but like, it's kind of like, if you just look at it, like, from a standpoint of Lost in Translation being her, like, feeling of loneliness in the marriage and his absence, and then Her being his response and his failures and his feeling during the divorce. I mean, like, it's really, anyway, I just found that interesting. I kind of want to watch them back to back. Like, I kind of want to watch Lost in Translation, and then I want to watch Her to see how they sort of match up.
Yeah.
After reading that article.
It'd be like, watch one right after the other. Kind of like, yo, within my response, 10 years later, it's like a delayed freestyle.
Well, I mean, if you kind of think about it, he probably needed
plus he had time to
put it all together and to cope. And
yeah, and plus the fact that, that he had other projects, too. I believe he, in between that span, he did Where the Wild Things Are.
Yeah.
And I think there was one other movie he did. I'm trying to remember if that, like, that came out around the time of, no, I don't think it came out around the time of Being John Malkovich. That came out well before, you know, that was out well before, yeah, that was, let's see, what was he doing? He was, the only movies he did since Lost in Translation were Where the Wild Things Are and Her. Mm-hmm. Which, yup. Again, two really great movies. But I do kind of got to watch Lost in Translation again.
Yeah.
Because it's one of those things where if you've seen the movie and then you find that out, it makes the movie completely different when you watch it.
Yeah.
And so, like, I'm kind of going to have to watch that again. And then I'll get all the other things that I didn't get.
Get all the little details.
Yeah. It's kind of like watching Inception 5 times over.
Yeah. It's unnecessary, let me tell you. The movie's unnecessarily complicated.
You know what, though? I didn't mind that, though. I'll still watch it repeatedly.
We need to go into this layer of Dream and then this layer and then go to that layer and then we'll do this. And you're like, what the fuck? Why?
And then the guy, and then you got Tom Hardy fresh.
We'll
have
the kick, and then we'll mention something about 10 years, but it never has developed. I don't understand. So, and we'll end the shot with a spinning top. Is it real? Is it a dream? We don't know.
Apparently, Christopher Nolan spoiled it already, saying that
he said it was real.
Yeah, he said it was real.
I was like, why that final shot? It makes no sense. It looks pretty. There's because, no point.
Because he wanted to troll everybody.
So.
That's fantastic, though. I mean, listen. You had Scarecrow from Batman.
Whatever.
You had DiCaprio. You had...
I'm not going to argue his cast or anything.
Actually, there's so many Batman people in that movie.
Yeah, no, he uses the same cast.
A lot of directors do, though.
They use similar people all the time. Yeah, of course. You find people you like working with. You find people who work well with you, and you have a rapport. Why wouldn't you use them again?
Yeah. Like, Sergio Leone worked with Clint Eastwood a lot until Sergio Leone did a movie with De Niro and was like, yeah, unlike Clint Eastwood, De Niro's a real actor. That's what he's
fucking... Burned that bridge.
Huh?
Burned that bridge. Yeah.
Well, I mean, let's face it. Clint Eastwood was iconic, but...
Just scowly face.
He looks like a pile of shit compared to Robert De Niro.
De Niro is De Niro.
Yeah. That's like saying that the moon is not as bright as the sun. Like, De Niro is a better actor than Clint Eastwood.
Wait, it's not?
No, it's not. That little, what you see at night is
you know
this...
what? I can't keep looking at the sun because I think my eyes are hurting.
Yeah, when there's an eclipse, you got to make sure to have that two sheet of paper thing.
Yeah.
Or you get blinded.
Do it.
Let's see. Even Ole Thorson was in nearly every Schwarzenegger movie. Wesseneck wants to point out. And let's face it, the Wilson brothers, Owen and Luke Wilson, freaking owed their career.
Oh, I thought you meant Jack and Joe Wilson, because those weirdos, not a fan.
Those weirdos, they skin cats.
wow.
Oh,
too far.
Too far. Listen, Cornax did his serial killer voice earlier in the show.
I'm glad I missed it. No, I was just here for when I got really angry about Navi.
Yeah, for Navi. Oh, boy.
Still angry about it.
So.
That's okay.
Don't.
You
we
also...
Can- Kill
Don't.
Navi, Kim.
No, I will stab you.
And then we will dye this, Kim.
Ariel's
going
to...
I'm actually going... I will set you on fire. You have no idea.
And we will make
I will
shoot.
Set you on fire. And
Navi
then I will scatter
shoot.
Your fucking ashes.
And then we can spy on James
in front of
Cameron.
The Navi Anti-Defamation League.
All right, Cornax, relax.
I love how it's like I'm talking about killing Navikin, and she's still like, fuck you! Fuck you! Fuck you!
Hey, guys.
We're never going to get fucked up fanfiction into a weekly bit, ever.
I don't care.
You guys don't care. I want to point out, guys, that I'm going to read off something, because it sounds like just a fantastic idea. Well, it would have been a fantastic idea, because it didn't happen.
It didn't happen? Oh, okay.
Listen, smartass.
Is that what an idea is? I have no idea.
Anyway, I'm posting it in chat. It's, remember when Watchmen came out and everyone was like, either loved it or hated it?
Yeah.
Which, I thought it was a very good, it was faithful, but it changed, the net changes were necessary.
Yeah.
Because let's face it.
I enjoyed it. I don't care.
Let's face it, the ending was kind of silly.
What? It's aliens.
In the comic, yeah. It's aliens, guys.
I mean, it was kind of silly. It was weird anyway, but...
So, for those who don't know, back in the day...
Gilliam, that's right, he was rumored.
Terry Gilliam was going to be the director of Watchmen. And, what was it? Joel Silver was actually going to write a treatment for it.
Okay.
And he said the following about the ending. Sam Hamm wrote the script, which differs dramatically from Alan Moore's original S over Explained to Coming Soon. What he did was he told the story as is, but instead of the whole notion of the intergalactic thing that was too hard and too silly, what he did was he maintained...
Oh, intergalactic, sorry.
Yeah. Planetary, intergalactic, what he did was he maintained that the existence of Dr. Manhattan had changed the whole balance of the world economy, the world political structure. He felt that character really altered the way reality had been. He had the Ozymandias character convince, essentially, the Dr. Manhattan character to go back and stop himself from being created, so there never would be a Dr. Manhattan character. He was the only character with real supernatural powers. He went back and prevented himself from being turned into Dr. Manhattan. And in the vortex that was created after that occurred, these characters from Watchmen only became characters in a comic book. So the three characters, I think it was Rorschach, Night Owl, and Silk Spectre.
Like, let me just fuck with the entire night.
Yeah. So these three characters, I think it was Rorschach, and Night Owl, and Silk Spectre. They're all of a sudden in Times Square, and there's a kid reading a comic book. They're being like people in Times Square dressing up like characters as opposed to really being these characters.
Oh, my God.
There's a kid reading the comic book, and he's like, hey, you're just like my comic book. It was very smart, it was very articulate, and it really gave a very satisfying resolution to the story, but it just didn't happen.
That's interesting.
It is.
Like, I...
And can I be...
Though I would be really pissed, but I like the idea of it.
I do, but let's face it.
Like, I would have probably been like, are you fucking kidding me? Like, this is the adaptation to Watchmen. But, like, it's awesome. Like, that's a great idea. And that would be great for any other comic thing if you just have the story.
Yeah.
Here. But I like that it's not just, oh, it's fictional characters in our world. There's, like, a reason to it. I don't know. I like it, and I would have been, like, angry probably that I don't get the Watchmen story I want, but that's a great story.
Yeah, let's face it, too. That ending sounds like the ending of a Terry Gilliam movie.
Right.
Plus, it kind of sounds like the ending of just – it sounds like it could have been the ending of Watchmen in the original book. Like, not – obviously, we know what the ending was, but, I mean – It almost sounds complicated and convoluted enough that it could have fit right in with the original text.
Very well could have. I speaking of Watchmen, I've still got to watch that, like, the all everything included cut. Where it has, like,
I have that. I need to watch that.
I want to watch that eventually. I've got to find it, locate it, and buy it. Okay. It's basically like reading the whole story. Holy shit. I can only imagine how long. The only way I'd be able to actually watch it all the way through in one sitting is by doing it on one of my off days from work.
Mm-hmm.
So,
you spend the day doing it because it's so long.
I can imagine. Like, and listen,
it's
I've said.
Like 4 hours long.
Which is longer than The Seven Samurai.
Yeah.
I want to point out. Which is like almost 4 hours.
Yep.
So, but I think that would have been a very interesting ending. Now, another thing I want to bring up, there's a lot of rumors going around about The Walking Dead.
Oh.
Now, that maybe Rick might be dying, maybe a lot of the main cast might be dying, or main group people in the comic, because they're going through a story called All at War.
Mm-hmm.
And the issue right after that storyline... All the characters in the cover are people you've never heard of.
Oh, you're talking about in the comics?
Yeah, in the comics. Okay. And it's saying an all new direction for The Walking Dead, starting with that issue.
Interesting.
So they're maybe they go a different direction with the characters. Maybe everyone dies and.
All right.
Or maybe they kill Rick and they decide to start the story with or
someone else.
But the question is, will Rick's hand be cut off?
In the comics,
I was talking about the comics. They're already cut off.
Yeah,
I'm not talking about the comics. I'm talking about the show.
Unfortunately, J.J. Stoner, it's not going to happen in the show. But, like, I feel like but it could be, like, issue 53 when they debut characters with the characters on the cover.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to point out, issue 53 has shot up in value now because Abraham, Rosita, and Eugene have debuted on the show.
Of course, of course. Anytime.
You know what I'm having a theory on? I don't think they're going to kill off everybody. But what I am thinking is that by the whole new direction thing, they're going to finish the story with All Out War. And then they're just going to completely start following a new group. And maybe they'll revisit the old group. Maybe they'll have a crossover. But I think they're not going to kill everyone. I think they might just leave it for
like,
that.
Okay, we're done with these group now. Let's find a different group.
Yeah.
Or maybe things get settled and they're like, we don't need to really do much with this group anymore. We've done it. We've set our story. But it's going to be a huge issue. So the last couple of parts of All at War, everyone, I think you guys might want to pick them up because, yeah, it's going to be crazy. And it's going to cause tears.
Crazy.
With, like, it could be like the prison where multiple people, so many people die. Like, there's that one issue, 48, where, like, literally, Lori, Judith, Herschel, and the governor all die in that. Among
no.
Sorry. Jerk.
Do they? Okay.
Which the funny part is watching.
Hey, you guys should watch Attack on Titan.
Why?
Because it's a really good anime. I don't know. I'm not a huge, like, I'm not really into anime, but this one's fucking good.
Yeah, I'm not generally into anime either. Like,
no, but this one's like these monsters are like attacking people. Well, I mean, there's always monsters, but like they're like humans live inside these like walls, like these walled cities. And these massive things called, like, titans, like, break through, and they just, like, eat people and shit.
Do they clash?
No.
Damn
it. It's a weird, I don't understand the series, because there's a clash, then there's wrath, there's attack, I don't know.
There's titans,
it's,
cats and dogs living together.
The series, yeah, it doesn't make any sense to me.
This does not make sense.
I mean,
it's true.
Attack on Titan totally
makes sense. This man has no dick.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know what?
No, Attack on Titan totally makes sense. But, like, anyway, just, it's, yeah.
All right. I'll
and
there's,
well, the animation, though, is pretty sick. And they use these things called 3D maneuver gears, which is, like, I don't know. It's I can't explain it, but it's fucking awesome.
Yeah.
Anyway, for other people who are fans.
Yes, exactly. And you know what? I said we were going to stay a few minutes. It's been a few minutes. It's 2 after 2. We're going to get going because, let's face it, I've got to edit this show to edit out the little bit of, shit that went down. So, with that, we are the Nerd Hour. Yes, we are the Nerd Hour. At CM Punchy, at Nerd Hour Ariel, at Cornax MLR. And we'll be back next week. We'll talk more than just movies next week. It was Oscar week. Bear with us, dicks. Yeah. Again,
someone seems defensive.
You're defensive.
You're defensive.
Your phone.
Face is defensive.
God damn it, Punchy.
Gotcha, bitch.
He knew I was going to go for your phone.
And then I intercepted it.
Fucker.
I intercepted it, and now you just feel like two people who were visited by Darren Sharper. Good night, folks.
No, I feel like one person who's seen your comedy. Oh!
Why is The Fox and the Hound under Feel Good Movies on Netflix?
I don't know, but
there is nothing feel good about that movie.
The first, like, 10 minutes.
Nope. It's all sad. All sadness. All downhill. No.
Well,
anyway, we should go now because I'm tired.
All they were standing on to go downhill.
Nice. All right, guys. We will be back next week.